Okay. So I'm going to guide a Vipassana practice, as Shel said, but it's going to sort of wind up being how to integrate Brahma Vihara into a Vipassana practice. So, but before I start the guided meditation, I wanted to just give you a little primer. I used to think it was pronounced primer, but someone corrected me along the way. So if you don't understand what primer is, think of primer. Someone gave me a primer, I mean, I'm going to give you a primer on the sixth sense basis. Because that's really what we do when we practice Vipassana. We check out what's going on at the sixth sense doors. And in Buddhist psychology, there are sixth sense doors. Sometimes we think there's just five, but in Buddhist psychology, the mind is added as the sixth sense door. So we have eyes as an eye door, an ear door, a nose door, a mouth door, a body door, and a mind door. And the objects of those six sense bases or six sense doors are, for eyes, it's objects that we see. For ears, it's sounds that we hear. For the nose, it's sense that smells that we smell. For the mouth, it's tastes. And for the body, it's sensations in the body. And for the mind, it's thoughts. So, the Buddha taught that that's the complete and total experience of our lives through one of these six sense doors. That's all we experience. Guy Armstrong, who I recently sat with on an emptiness retreat, says that was quite a revolutionary teaching. And it even strikes me as revolutionary today. You mean that's all there is? That's it? What we experience through the six senses? That's my sum total experience of this life? Specifically, this is what the Buddha said, which can be found in the Connected Discourses. He said, "Monks, what is the totality of things? Listen, attend carefully, and I will teach you the totality of things. It is simply the eye and sights, the ear and sounds, the nose and smells, the tongue and tastes, the body and sensations, and the mind and mind objects." Anyone who said they were going to describe anything beyond this as the totality of things would not be speaking of something they knew about. And what's not on that list? I, me, or mine. That's just a little teaser. So in Vipassana practice, we learn how to be mindful of these six sense doors. Sometimes they're called six sense gates or gateways into our experience. And we're taught to be mindful of them so that we can practice restraint around them on what we let in to germinate about and how we let it in and whether we're going to add to it with our thoughts. So we taste something we don't like. Why did they serve that? Don't they know that nobody likes this? Why in the world? Who's suffering? So, mindful of taste. Oh, I don't like that. Why did they serve that? Oh, I'm adding on to the taste with thought and creating my suffering. Can I let that go? So any object that arises through one of the six sense doors is a suitable area for Vipassana practice. You know, we can ask things like, this thing I'm fretting about that came in through the sense door, is it permanent? Or is this taste going to go away in a few minutes and it won't matter? Is this thing I'm angry about going to, am I going to have this anger forever or is it going to come and go? Is the object that I'm angry about, is it permanent? All right, so with that, I'm going to lead us through a guided meditation that focuses on these sense gates, these sense doors. And I'm not going to do all six of them, right? Because when we're sitting with our eyes closed, the eye sense door is not engaged. So we're not going to talk about that, but that's going to be a useful practice for you in walking meditation. You see something you like, and then you say, oh, I wish I could grow flowers like that. I can't. I haven't got a green thumb. No, I've never had, and then, or can you just be with the beauty of the flower? So you do that on walking meditation. You can do the eye sense door. We're not going to do taste because we're not tasting much while we have our eyes closed sitting on the cushion. But where can you do that? At mealtime. Can you just be with something that's delicious without, having to get up and go get more? Just for a moment. You might wind up getting more, but you might get it from a place of wisdom rather than craving. And so we're not going to do the eyes, we're not going to do taste, and we're not going to do smell, even though something might be smelling bad or good next to you, but we're not going to do that. I'll let you do that on your own at a later time. So those three we're not going to do in the guided meditation. But we are going to do, eyes, ears, we're going to do sound, nose, we're not going to do taste, we're not going to do. Body sensation we're going to do. So we're going to go sound, body sensation, and the noggin. What goes on up here a little bit. Okay? So those three I'm going to concentrate on during the guided meditation. And by the way, this was an insight to me somewhere along the line, which seems kind of silly that I needed to have an insight to realize this, but breath is part of the body. So when I guide you with breath, I'll and then I'll guide you with body sensation. It's really both in under the sense door of body sensation, because when we're breathing, it's just part of the body. All right, so get into a comfortable position, one that you can hold for about 30 minutes. Okay. And just notice your breathing. Just notice the in-breath and the out-breath. And notice where you're noticing it. Is where you're noticing the breath at the nostrils, the chest, the tummy? There's no right place. It's just being mindful of where the sensation is of breathing. Is it the air as it comes in and goes out of the nostrils? Or is it the gentle movement of the chest or the tummy? And are you forcing your breathing all to be able to notice it, or are you letting it just naturally rise and fall? Like all phenomenon that rises and falls, that comes into existence and disappears, the arising and passing away of each breath, such a lesson in impermanence. There's the beginning of each in-breath, the middle of each in-breath, and the ending of each in-breath. There's the gap between the in-breath and the out-breath. And then there's the beginning of the out-breath, and the middle of the out-breath, and the ending of the out-breath. And there's the gap between the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the next in-breath. So that's all there for noticing. But, you know, like walking meditation, sometimes it's all we can do to notice that the right foot is going down, let alone the toes and the ball of the feet and the heel. We just notice right, left, right, left. And with breathing, sometimes all we notice is in, out. Sometimes all we notice is in, in, in. And sometimes we're distracted for 5 minutes and don't even notice a single breath. But every now and then, we can get a little more mindful and notice a little more of what's really going on in this moment. Without adding anything to it. And the same with body sensation that occurs in the body other than the breath. So you might be mindful, for instance, of what your hands are touching. Is it another hand? One hand might be touching another hand, or one hand might be touching material that you're wearing, and the other might be touching skin, or they both might be touching skin, or one might be even touching the ground, as you see the Buddha doing in some statues on the night of his enlightenment. What's your hand doing? Just being mindful of the body sensation. So we've looked at breath, we've looked at hands. What about your feet? What are they doing? What are they touching? What's the Vedana? V-E-D-E-N-A. It's a Pali word for pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Is the Vedana neutral? Or is it a pleasant sensation? If your foot's going to sleep, it might be an unpleasant sensation. What about an itch? Can I be mindful that something is itching in the body somewhere without immediately scurrying to scratch it? What would happen if I didn't scratch it? Would it drive me absolutely crazy? Or could I sit with an itch just once to see what it's like to not scratch it? Would it arise and fall like all other phenomenon, or would it last forever? And would I die from not being able to scratch it? What would that be like? Could I be present to the itch, be mindful of the itch, and also scratch it? Oh, I could be mindful I have an itch, pause, and then mindfully raise an arm. So I'm very mindful of the body sensation of raising an arm, moving the hand over to the itch, and I'm mindful of the movement of the scratching of the itch. And I'm mindful of pulling the hand away from the itch after it's been scratched and placing the arm down. Two totally different responses to an itch, either not scratching it or scratching it mindfully. Both different experiences than mindlessly scurrying to scratch. So, what's the vedana of an itch? Unpleasant, perhaps. Am I going to react, or am I going to respond with wisdom? If we can just be with the vedana of our lives without reacting mindlessly, but responding with wisdom, we'll have freedom. What about a teardrop? While we're meditating, a teardrop starts falling down out of the corner of one eye, or both, and is trickling down the skin and causing all kinds of body sensations as it falls and rubs the skin, tingling and irritation and pleasantness and unpleasantness and neutral. Am I going to react mindlessly and wipe it away before it drives me out of my mind? Or can I be with a teardrop as it finds its way all the way down my cheek and onto my side of my face and drips and drips all the way down to my chin and lets go of the face and drops onto my shirt? Without wiping it away? Or can I be mindful of the vedana of the teardrop, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and let it be present to me, the vedana, and then choose whether I want to wipe it away or not from a place of wisdom and mindfulness? And then mindfully raising the hand and the arm and the back of the hand to wipe it away mindfully, feeling the wetness of the teardrop on my hand as I wipe it, and placing the hand mindfully back down in my lap. If we can be present to the vedana of our lives, the pleasant, the unpleasant, and the neutral initial categorization of input through the sense doors. Vedana, the initial categorization of input through the sense doors into either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. If we can be pleasant to that vedana without immediately responding, which is kind of an automatic pilot reactionary move. If we can be just present to it for a moment, can we pause before we jump to react, to slap it away? So the breath, the hands, the feet, the tears, the itching, the discomfort in the body as we're sitting for long periods and over days. Oh, I I've got this discomfort. Oh, let me change positions real quick. Ah, that's better. And then, no, that wasn't quite right. Let me get over here. That might do it. That's not it either. Huh? Suffering. Can I be present to the vedana of discomfort in the body? The unpleasantness, or the pleasantness, or the neutral, without reaction immediately, just pausing. Oh, that's unpleasant. Huh. How do I choose to respond to this unpleasantness? Can I sit with it a little while longer? Will it go away? If I sit with this unpleasantness, will I be able to walk after this sit? Will I be able to get up? Or is the wise thing here to actually move my body so that it has more comfort? And if I decide to move it, can I do it mindfully? You know, a limb at a time. And just a tiny adjustment mindfully until I get the whole thing worked out. Each repositioning mindfully. If we can be mindful to the vedana of our lives without reacting on automatic pilot, we will have freedom. So that's the body. What about sound? If we're using breath as our anchor, sometimes there's sound in the background that's really not interfering with us being present to the breath. And we can just let sound be sound in the background, and it's not a problem. But sometimes the sound will be more in the foreground, and we may choose to drop our mindfulness of the breath and let sound be the object of our meditation for a while as it arises and passes away. Sound is just as appropriate as an object of meditation as the breath is. Anything through any of the sense doors is a good object of meditation. We usually use breath as the anchor because it's neutral. The vedana of breath is usually neutral, and so we don't get all caught up in our minds about breath. But we can shift to sound when it becomes more in the foreground. Oh, listen to that bird. What's the vedana for the sound of the chirping of the bird? Oh, it's pleasant. I like that. They should have more chirping around here. They should pipe in music of bird chirping. That would be good. What's wrong with them? They don't think of these things. Or can I just be mindful of the pleasantness, the pleasant vedana of the bird chirping without wanting more? It was reported once at a meditation retreat, there was an airplane flying over, and the weather was nice, all the windows were open, and the yogis could hear the airplane flying over. And one yogi left a note for the teacher that said, Can you please call the airport tower and have them redirect the airplanes away from the meditation center so that it does not interfere with the sitting of the yogis during this retreat? Unpleasant Vedana from sound, demanding that it be different without mindfulness. Causing himself a lot of suffering. And what about that noise? You know, we were sitting here for 15 minutes and somebody or something makes a sound and jars us. And we get annoyed. I was sitting so quietly, and that noise that person or that thing did really interrupted my peacefulness here. But in my experience, that noise, that annoying noise, woke me up from the trance of thought. Not the peacefulness of sitting mindfully. And so I bow to that person who made that annoying noise. Thank you for waking me up out of my suffering. The noise you made was so helpful. I'm now awake. Aya Kema, a German-born Jewish nun who's written lots of wonderful books about meditation. She was a grandmother, married and divorced twice before she became a nun in her 50s. She had a three-part prescription for finding relief from suffering. And this is where we bring in the Brahmaviharas to the Vipassana practice. She said, recognize that you're in an unwholesome mind state. Don't blame the trigger. And substitute a wholesome mind state for the unwholesome one. So, recognize when you're in an unwholesome mind state of wanting things to be different, you know, reacting rather than responding from wisdom. When you're wanting things to be different than the way they are from a place of ignorance. Don't blame the trigger. Don't blame that person who made the sound that's causing you to be annoyed. And substitute a wholesome mind state in its place. And what is a wholesome mind state? The Brahmaviharas. Sending loving kindness to that person. And to myself. Maybe only to myself. Oh. Sweetheart, you got so upset over that. It's so understandable given your conditioning. I can just be present to the upsetness. Or, oh, neighbor, thank you for moving. And making that noise that woke me up. Metta, compassion, You must be in such pain for having to move like that. I'm so sorry. Mudita, happiness for another's happiness or success. Oh, neighbor, you've been sitting so still for so long. Instead of being jealous, I have mudita for you. I'm happy for your stillness. Recognizing an unwholesome thought, not blaming the trigger, and substituting a wholesome thought, a Brahma thought of Brahmavihara, in place of the unwholesome. So that's body and sound, and now we'll move into our thoughts, the objects of our mind, being mindful of thoughts. Which, together with body sensations, produce emotion, right? Our thoughts include memories, planning, the objects of mind can be moods, fantasizing. Can we be mindful of our thoughts without reacting mindlessly? When we're off the cushion, this can take the form of speech and actions that can be hurtful to us and others. So can we get practice on the cushion of just being mindful of these thoughts and emotions and memories and moods and planning and fantasizing? Without mindlessly reacting. Can we notice that a thought is causing a suffering? We have a thought. And then we have more thoughts on top of that thought. And then we have more thoughts on top of those thoughts. And before you know it, we're having papancha thinking. Papancha, a word that kind of sounds like what it means. Thoughts on top of thoughts on top of more thoughts. Papancha. Papancha thinking. Or can we just be mindful of whether a thought is causing suffering? If it's an unwholesome thought of greed, which includes, you know, fantasizing and thoughts of craving that lead to addictive action, wanting something we don't have, wanting more of it, those kinds of greedy thoughts, Or is it a thought of aversion, which includes fear or resentment or anger or hatred, annoyance, thoughts of not wanting? Can we be mindful of those thoughts without papancha, without adding more and more and more thoughts on top of it? Can we just be mindful to the vedana of thought? Oh, pleasant thought. Does it have to grow into greed? Or can I just be present to the pleasantness of this thought? Or what about an unpleasant thought? Can I just be present to the unpleasantness of that memory without hating or resenting? When we're present to the vedana of our lives without reacting on automatic pilot, but responding with wisdom, we can have freedom. A thought about a memory is not the past experience. It's just a thought in this moment about the past experience. We can relive the torment from a past experience mindlessly and cause ourselves all kinds of suffering. Or we can just be present to the memory of it, the unpleasantness of it, without choosing to go down that road. So being present to breath and body sensations. I mean, really present. Watching them arise and pass away. Choosing whether to respond from mindfulness or not. The same with sound. And recognizing an unwholesome reaction, mind state. Not blaming the trigger. And substituting a Brahmavihara for the unwholesome mind state. And being present with thoughts and emotions and memories. Noticing that pleasant or unpleasant vedana before it blossoms into full-blown greed or aversion. Just being with the vedana of our lives without papancha.